WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Haiti is expelling UN human rights monitors. It's still unclear whether the Clinton administration plans to invade. The U.S. has 14 warships in waters near Haiti, enforcing the trade embargo and carrying 2,000 Marines. It's impossible to understand Haiti without understanding its unique history and its unique relationship to Africa and America. My guest Patrick Bellegarde-Smith is the director of the Department of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He grew up in Haiti under the dictatorship of François Papadoc Duvalier. Bellegarde-Smith is the author of the book Haiti, The Breached Citadel. His previous book, In the Shadow of Powers, is about his grandfather, the late Haitian social philosopher Dantès Bellegarde. Back in 1915, the U.S. began a military occupation of Haiti, which lasted until 1934. I asked Patrick Bellegarde-Smith about the legacy of that occupation.
Well, there are a number of legacies from that occupation. The most powerful legacy is the Haitian Army. It was created by the U.S. Marine Corps. It was officered by the Marine Corps. Haitian military officers since that time, the early part of the century, have been trained in the U.S. or in Haiti by Americans. That is the most lasting legacy. Another legacy is that of distrust that has existed in Haiti towards the United States, because the U.S. imported to Haiti a very special brand, an Anglo-Saxon brand of racism, something that Haitians were not much, they were aware of it, but they had not stumbled upon it in a very real sense. And this has transformed Haiti. In fact, that military occupation of the country is the watershed event in Haitian, modern Haitian history, and it propels Haiti into the 20th century in that sense. It's a clear break with the past, with the Haitian past, and Haiti has not recovered yet.
What were the reasons for the United States invasion of Haiti?
The United States has had its mind to get a particular port in northwest Haiti, the Mall Saint-Nicolas, opposite Guantanamo Bay. And as you know, Guantanamo Bay will revert to Cuba by the end of the century. In the 1890s, there were a great deal of effort, diplomatic effort, from the part of the U.S. to acquire that piece of territory, which is probably the best natural port in the entire Caribbean area. And Haitians have resisted, and to this date, they have succeeded in resisting those advances. Also, the plan to invade Haiti had been drafted years ahead of time. In fact, the papers had been typed, and the date was left in blank, so that at the slightest provocation, the Marines would have an excuse to come down. There were economic interests. There was, from the part of American businessmen in Haiti, there are today as well. There was also the desire to stop further growth of German economic interests in the country. And so it was, there were a number of reasons for that. But in the final analysis, I think economic interests, as well as the defense of the Panama Canal, which was to be built, was instrumental in wanting to secure Haiti as a kind of a base.
How much do you think that 19-year American military occupation of Haiti shaped the relationship between Haiti and the U.S.?
It has, because up to that point, granted that the import-export trade with the U.S. was growing and had become so substantial as to provide a majority of the commerce of Haiti in between the U.S. and Haiti, up to that point, at least in diplomatic terms and political terms, Germany had an impact. France certainly had a powerful presence. England did as well. After the U.S. occupation of Haiti, the relationship is bilateral. It's Haiti, U.S., and the European powers fall to the wayside. So Haiti, as a result, loses a great deal of independence because it is not able to play one against the other any longer. It becomes firmly placed in the orbit of the United States economically as well as politically. The Haitian reaction to that was to mount a guerrilla effort. Maybe as many as 50,000 Haitians may have died in various ways, not direct military involvement, but in other ways as well. And there are people still alive who remember that period of time. And so people are very nervous about the possibility of a new invasion because the Marine Corps was absolutely brutal, absolutely brutal.
So there was a guerrilla war against the
yes,
U.S. occupation.
Yes.
Do you think there's ambivalence in Haiti about the possibility of United States intervening there?
Yes, a great deal of ambivalence. People are split on this issue. Haitians will not, even those who might favor an intervention because we are unable at this point to solve our problems, would not say it publicly. People are deeply divided over this issue. On all camps, actually, it's not just the peasantry and the urban working class that supports President Aristide or the small Haitian elites. Everybody seems to be divided enough two minds on this particular in this particular area.
Explain the division between the two minds.
Well, on the one hand, we realize that a solution is nowhere in the offing because a small percentage of population, perhaps at most 5%, resist the desires of 90-95% of the Haitian population. And that 5% happens to have all the power now at its command. So that since those situations cannot be resolved very easily, the army is solidly entrenched, does not show any signs of wanting to leave the seat of power, then individuals have told me, well, perhaps that's the only way out. All my life as an academician, I have written about Haitian foreign policy and international relations. And I have always argued that the way to go for Haiti and countries of that size, keeping in mind that Haiti is one of the giant countries of the Caribbean, it's a huge country if one compares it to others, is to go the collective security route. By collective security, I mean very simply that one has to rely for national defense, not on one's own means, not on the Haitian army, which I think is unnecessary, quite frankly. It could not mount a defense if it had to, but on the Organization of American States, on the United Nations, and whatever other international organizations are erected for that purpose. But I would find it difficult, personally, for all kinds of reasons, to see the U.S. go in and certainly go in alone. I have a problem with that. As a Haitian, I would have a big problem with that.
And what's your problem?
No one wants to be invaded by a foreign army. It's degrading. It's insulting. It's humiliating. And this came to me full force when a young 20-year-old Marine Corps was interviewed, I think it might have been CNN, this past week. He was on his way to Haiti, and his contempt that was quite visible, I think he had returned from Somalia and elsewhere, his contempt was obvious, and I remembered, I was not born then, but I remembered the stories of 1915 and what those young Marines did to Haiti. Unless they are solidly instructed, they might turn out to do the same thing. There was utter contempt in his voice.
My guest is Patrick Bellegarde-Smith. He's the head of the Department of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Maybe it would be helpful for us if you gave us a sense of where you think Haiti fits into the African diaspora.
Well, Haiti is clearly the most African of American states, of American nation states. And Haiti becomes terribly significant in the context of the African diaspora, and universally as well, because it was the first country of African origin, modern country of African origin, to have come about 200 years ago. It was the only place in human history where enslaved people were able to free themselves and make it stick. And Haitians are, of course, proud of that. And whereby the American Revolution or the French Revolution were not about freedom. They were not about anti-slavery movements. The Haitian Revolution was about the destruction of slavery, not just in Haiti, but everywhere else.
Yeah, Haiti won its independence in 1804 after a 13-year slave revolt.
Yes, yes, and about 100,000 Haitians died in the process. It was a very murderous war.
This is, I guess, the most successful slave revolt in history?
That was the only successful slave revolt. The closest we get to it is Spartacus in Rome, and he did not succeed.
What made this revolt successful?
The desire of African-born Haitians, because the majority of Haitians in the 18th century at the time of that revolt, of that revolution, distinguishing it from a revolt, were born in Africa. The desire that they had collectively to become free and to eradicate slavery. Also, much of the leadership had been trained militarily by the French. Those were individuals who had been part of the colonial French army in Saint-Domingue, as Haiti was then called. These are individuals, when they were youngsters, I mean in their early teens, late teens, had traveled to the United States and fought for U.S. independence, notably at the Battle of Savannah, Georgia in 1789. Under General Rochambeau, the French general, when France had a great many troops in the U.S., helping U.S. achieve its own independence. There has always been the desire for freedom in the country. And in fact, after independence was achieved in 1804, the population remained restive because power was wrestled away from it by emerging, budding elites, those very same elites who in 1994 are still in control of Haiti. All the revolts and uprisings that we see over the course of the last two centuries are, I think, directly connected to what had transpired 200 years ago. It is part of that same struggle.
Well, how did elites win control of Haiti after a successful uprising, a successful slave revolt?
Well, those who became the present-day elites aligned themselves with the enslaved Africans when they attempted to engineer a grand alliance with the French. But the French were blinded by their own racism and refused to make an alliance with black and mulatto slave owners because these people had slaves of their own. You had black slave owners in Haiti. And they wanted the preservation of slavery, and they wanted to get a better deal from the French.
So the more powerful black people who own slaves in Haiti, teamed up with the slaves during the slave revolt, and then basically tyrannized them afterwards?
Yes, exactly. That's what happened. And this process was completed essentially by 1844. Up to that point, there might have been a chance. In 1806, you have the assassination of Jean-Jacques Dessalines, who is our George Washington, assassination by these emerging, budding elites. Between 1806 and 1844, when there is a massive uprising in the south of Haiti from the part of the peasants wanting to control the country, you have the consolidation of upper class, what essentially is an upper class society, pro-French in its outlook, pro-Western in its outlook, pro-Christian in its outlook, against a population which is not French, which is not Western, which is not Catholic, which is not Christian.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Patrick Bellegarde-Smith. He's the head of the Department of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and has written a lot about Haiti. He is Haitian. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Patrick Bellegarde-Smith, head of the Department of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He's Haitian and has written extensively about the history of Haiti. So in Haiti, you get a very African culture because in 1804, when the blacks win the revolt, a lot of the black people there are Africans. I mean, they weren't born in Haiti. They were born in Africa.
Many of them were born in Africa. Some, obviously, were born in Haiti as well.
What are the most obvious traces now of African culture in Haiti?
The most obvious traits of African culture in Haiti come from the two most major significant elements in any culture, and that is religion and language. The Haitian national religion is what we call here, and we got that name from Hollywood, not from ourselves, voodoo. It's a national religion, recognized as such by most Haitians, although it was underground up to recently, not allowed, though practiced by just about everybody, including members of that elite that we talk about. And the language, which is at its base, in terms of its syntax and grammar, overwhelmingly a West African language related to Fon and to Ewe of West Africa, but whose vocabulary is overwhelmingly derived from French and Old French. But those are the two major elements in Haitian culture, in any culture, that give Haiti its special position in the Western Hemisphaire.
What are the connections between voodoo and African religion?
Voodoo is an African religion. In terms of its ethos, in terms of the rituals, in terms of the belief system that encompass all areas of life, not just religion. A religion in Haiti, as religion in Africa, on the African continent, is not something apart from the rest of the culture, apart from the rest of society. It is well integrated into everyday life. People who practice the religion, which is the overwhelming majority of the Haitian people, would say very simply, I serve the spirits, that's all. I serve the spirit. There is not a particular word. It's not I practice voodoo. I serve the spirits.
The deposed president, Aristide, is a Roman Catholic priest. Does his position in Haiti represent a change in the position of the church in Haiti?
Oh, no, not at all. The church does not like him, has never liked him, mm-hmm. has tried to muzzle him. Aristide has done something somewhat unusual for a man in his position. The priesthood, as the military, is an avenue for social mobility in Haiti. If you come from poor background, from working class background or a background of the peasantry, which he does, the way to escape that particular status is to become either a priest or a military officer. What he has done, however, he has never reneged his social origin. He understands the people. He is from the people, which is why the people are so enthusiastic about him. He has not left them when he became a priest. He has stayed right alongside them. And that makes him an unusual man, very unusual. Therefore, not to be trusted by the elites, because they allowed him to become a priest. He should have left these people behind. He has not.
You grew up in Haiti, so I'd like to talk with you a little bit about your experiences there. Let me ask you first about your grandfather, Dantes Bellegarde, who is a social philosopher in Haiti. What's his importance in Haitian history?
My grandfather was one of two major social philosophers of the first part of the century. His very close friend, Jean-Price Mas, represented the other tendency in Haitian life and culture. My grandfather represented the pro-Western forces, the pro-French, the pro-capitalist, the anti-communist forces, the pro-Christian. Jean-Price Mas emphasized a bit more readily the African content of Haitian culture. So they gave rise to very different movements in that sense.
I'm wondering if you grew up in a wealthy, privileged family in Haiti.
Very much so.
And if you ever politically rebelled against them.
Oh, yes, very much so. I have friends that won't talk to me anymore as a result. The Haitian social structure is very intricate, very involved. We have about 300 millionaires or so, multimillionaires, in that country. At the other end of the spectrum, the per capita income, world per capita income, is about $150 a year. I came from a very privileged background, highly educated background. We did not have money. By Haitian standards, I suppose we did. By American standards, we were poor. But let's put it this way. The word that comes to mind which is not entirely appropriate, is the word aristocracy. That's the word that comes to mind. As distinguished from those with money, the elites with money, that would be called with that that French word bourgeoisie. And some of these individuals came from the middle class, obviously, over the last 30 or so years. We never had any money as such. By Haitian standards, we did, though.
Was there a political turning point in your life that was behind your political shift and your split with the family? Did it have anything to do with being educated abroad?
No, it started in Haiti proper, where I saw very little rhyme or reason in the social discrimination that I observed when it was not really possible for me to have friends in the middle class, because we ought not to talk to people like that. And I rebelled at that time, and I must have been 10 years old, and I have not stopped since. So it was very difficult for me to accept the dictates of a society where very rigid social class obtained.
Would you like to see Aristide become president again?
Well, he has to become president again because he was elected. It never occurred to me when we had a series of presidents in the United States for me to beg Colin Powell to intervene. It never occurred to me. I don't think it ought to occur to anyone. President Aristide was elected with a higher percentage of the vote than any elected president in the Western Hemisphere. That includes Bill Clinton and all the presidents in Latin America. Highest percentage. So whether one likes him or one doesn't like him is quite irrelevant. I have not liked an American president since Kennedy. So, but I would not dream of asking for military, U.S. military intervention against the White House. Mm-hmm. Never dream of it.
I want to thank you very much for talking
thank
about
you. This. Thank you.
Patrick Bellegarde-Smith directs the Department of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He's the author of Haiti, The Breached Citadel. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.